Well, it looks like our good friend Spectre and Meltdown are back in the news again. And
you know, they aren't going to go away. They're like here forever.
Yeah. And it looks like they're really going to be here forever because Intel has said that, like, if you have these older chips, it's not happening. You're not getting your patch. So,
and to be quite fair to Intel, these are really old. If you're still running one of these, I'm sorry.
And yeah, and it's like the machine with the fix causes like the 30% reduction in processing power and performance. These machines probably just couldn't handle the fix when you think about it.
They don't have 30% to give.
Yeah, and I was reading the list of these, and I think it's like the Intel Core. I don't know if it's the Intel Core 2 Duo or the Intel Core 2. I don't know if it's the Core 2 Duos that are not going to get the patch, but I was thinking it's like, you know, I have some of these machines still running around that are running the Intel Core 2 Intel Core 2 Duos, and yeah, they're not going to get this patch, and they couldn't handle it.
It's okay. I mean, think of that i3, the absolute best, the absolute worst i3 you can think of, and then put that Core 2 underneath it. That's where we're already dealing with performance. So I mean,
yeah, and so, but hey, back in the day, they were great, but now it's not so much.
No. Have you ever put Windows 10 on a Core 2?
Yes.
Did you get the blue screen during install?
No. Luckily, it was on an SSD too, so I mean it wasn't too bad of an experience. It's just that it's like Windows would run okay, but trying to do anything after Windows loads, not happening.
It's like I've got Windows now.
And these machines that we have the Core 2 Duos in, there are what we call AR machines for accelerated reader. They're the ones that we put like a couple of them in the classrooms. Just so kids can take their AR tests or do whatever the teacher needs them to do at that point. And I think since the hurricane and everybody's displaced, teachers aren't actually in their real classroom. Well, most of the elementaries isn't in their actual classrooms. And so we didn't put those machines back in after we started getting back in our building. And I think we're going to maybe keep that trend because at this point we pretty much have where every class has access to at least 5-something. In their classroom, 5 iPads or 5 Chromebooks. And so,
well, if you need, I got some Wise ThinkLights if you want to put them out there.
I don't really want to put anything in there because I want to use it as an excuse to get more mobile devices. Because, I mean, even though they're kind of a bit of a headache because it's like you're one person and you have all of these devices you need to manage, but if I'm going to manage a lot of devices, I would rather them be either Chromebooks or iPads because I'm not having to worry about Windows updates. I'm not having to worry about viruses. I'm not having to worry about all these other things. And they just work. I mean, I don't have to worry about apps, updating new versions of apps because they just get updated. And so I was telling my supervisor, I was like, look, if we have to put machines back in there, I mean, why can't we just start looking at like Chromeboxes to put in there?
Yeah.
Or put a monitor with a Chrome stick in the back of it, like tied down where they can't pull it out.
You're right. And in fact, I've updated our obsolescence plan to, even for teachers now, what I'm going to be doing is that in the past, they had 2 machines here, and then when I came here, I did a single laptop with a dock setup and whatnot. But what I'm going to be going back with this time is I'm just going to do a desktop, and I'm going to buy them a Chromebook. They'll be happier with the setup, and it'll be the same price, if not a little less.
I mean, and probably that's all they need because the desktop is going to run their smart notebook or yep. PowerPoint or whatever they're presenting, and they probably use the laptop to like sit in the back of the room and be or even up front and do their attendance, do their grade book, check their email, the stuff that the kids don't necessarily need to see. See, our teachers make use of that freeze button on that projector remote a whole lot.
Oh. And so see, I regretted this at the beginning. I went and deployed out extended mode desktops and the smart boards were the second screens. So the teacher had their screen here and then they had their smart board, which is the second screen with touch enabled. And I put some, because Windows 7 didn't have dual taskbars down there, I put some interesting software, to say the least, to have a start button and whatnot over there. And if you touch something on that side of the monitor, it would automatically have that window open on that one. And it worked okay at the beginning, and then it started falling apart.
Yeah, and it's like I tried to push some of our, like, we have like 1 or 2 users that want to use it in extended desktop mode. But I can't get them to understand. It's like, just click it and drag it over.
Well,
that's all you have to do.
The problem I had with that is their desks were facing away. They couldn't just click and drag because they'd have to stop, walk around, go move the mouse, click and drag it, come walk back around.
Yeah, that's kind of like, that's. I mean, yeah, because a lot of times like our stuff is like in the complete back of the room, and it's just hard because it's like, you know, we're limited on funds, and so it's like, hey, we're going to run this projector. Where do you want it? And I was like, well, the desk is currently right here, so let's put it here.
And then, oh, you ask?
Well, I mean, no. Like, the installers ask us, and so we're like, well, the desk is right here, so let's just put it right here. And then the teachers want to move the desks, or then that teacher leaves, and a new teacher comes in, and the desk is in the back of the room instead of in the front of the room, and so it's just, I wish that, like, wireless display technology was where we needed it to be. I just still can't trust it that much.
Yeah, or at least if the wireless HDMI spec actually worked.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's just. I mean, I know some folks. I mean, it's a church. It's not a school district. But our neighbors, they had like HDMI extension over wireless, and it never worked right. And so they were like, "What do we need to do?" It's like, if you're going to do it, just run your Cat 6 cable through the ceiling and just get you HDMI over Cat 6 converters and just do it that way. I said, you have one cable to run. It's cheaper, and it's a little bitty cable. And so if you can't run in the ceiling, you can hide it in the corner of the floor a lot better. So I mean, it's just like the wireless is just, and I mean, and we talked about before with my wireless interference issues. And so I just really don't want that much more wireless stuff going on in here that would interfere with other things that are more important. Yeah.
I think when I was looking, because there was a classroom, I was thinking about putting that wireless HDMI stuff in there. It was like 60 gigahertz, and it's like 30 feet line of sight. I'm like, whoa, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, that's not happening. So, I mean, but that's what we want to do. We want to take out all those old machines, and if they have to have something, we either want to get more Chromebook carts. And, I mean, I think the eventual goal is to get a cart per room, to be honest with you. That's a lot to manage, but I mean, I would rather manage that.
I guess it would be like managing 10 of them, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's all the same, but I mean, it's just changing keyboards on 30 devices per classroom instead of, it's like, let's get some indestructible models.
Oh man, Lenovo made this really interesting laptop a couple years ago. I can't remember what it was called, but it was just a clamshell design, but the keyboard surface had no keys on it. It was basically like a giant Wacom tablet, and the key. And when you turn on the keyboard, it just lit up where the keys were.
That would
Chromebooks need that.
Yeah, so we don't have to change keys. But that's really the only thing I worry about. I mean, I don't really want to put iPads in everybody's classroom. That's not cost effective, and especially for the things that we do and the things we're required to do. I mean, they just won't meet all of those needs for everybody. Not without buying a whole bunch of extra stuff to go with it, and so it just makes the cost even more expensive. But I mean, I just don't want to put those old Windows machines in. I mean, it's managing Windows 10. It's not that it's bad. It's not that managing Windows 10 is bad. I mean, with group policy and PowerShell, and it's gotten a lot easier than the days of Windows XP and sometime, and even Windows 7, it's like Windows 10, you can do a lot more things. You get a lot more access to stuff in group policy to be able to pull things off. But just, it's like, hey, we need this app on this Chromebook. Okay, I just go to the Chrome Web Store, grab the little funky name thing at the top of the link, and then push it out, and it's good to go. And it's installed, and it stays up to date, and I don't have to worry about it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with Windows. It's just that we've seen a better way of doing it now.
And, you know, I actually got to thinking about that. You know, with Windows coming to ARM again, they're going to try again. I'm wondering if, like, and Microsoft actually just did some reorganization. It's almost like they split the Windows team up and put, like, some of them under one person and some of them under something else. And it's almost like we might actually, if you kind of read the tea leaves a little bit, it's like Windows might actually be going away. I mean,
well, they did just announce this week that 64-bit x86 apps are coming to the ARM version of Windows in May.
Well, there you go. And so I'm wondering if there's a version of Windows in the pipeline, and it might be the Windows 10 on ARM, that is more Chromebook-like. That it's a simple device you log into, you pull your stuff down, and then, I don't want to say disposable, but a Chromebook is essentially a disposable device. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's on there. I mean, if it gets trashed, it gets trashed. You just sign into another device and you didn't lose anything. unless you had something stored in your downloads folder. But
shame on you.
Yeah, just use Google Drive. It's unlimited storage. Have at it. At least it's more than 200 gigs, iCloud. But so I'm wondering if Microsoft may be thinking, like, big picture. It's like, hey, maybe this is what people want. People want ease of use. Because, I mean, when you think about it, 85% of computer users could probably do everything that they do on a Chromebook.
And I agree with that, especially now that they got the Android app support and container stuff's coming soon. And I really hope Microsoft is paying attention to that and doing it, because they have the underlying frameworks for it with, like, Azure AD and whatnot, and Intune hosted in the cloud and whatnot, and Office 365. I mean, they have everything, all the components they already need. They just need to put them together better.
Yeah, and I remember there was a podcast that I was listening to this morning on my way to work. They were talking about, like, under Steve Ballmer, everything was Windows, 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 Windows. And now under this new guy, Nutella.
Yeah, Nutella.
The sandwich spread, I guess. Nutella, that's how we remember it. It's probably not the right way to say it. But he is more like Microsoft as a service. It's like, I think he finally realized nobody really wants a Microsoft device. Everybody wants this other device. Let's make it where we can at least get Office and these other products that we have on those devices.
Yeah, he's very service-oriented. But the Surface line under him has done some pretty cool things with, like, the Studio and whatnot. So
they just need to redo the dock. Cool, the Surface dock is a terrible product.
That little plug-and-play dock?
Yes, it is
that
awful.
One sucks. Bring back the original dock. The original dock was awesome.
The one where, like, the Surface actually
clamped in on the sides.
Yeah, I mean, this is,
it
like,
was phenomenal.
I have a ticket in with Microsoft, and, you know, since it's a dock, it's, like, not priority, and so I'll go 7 days without hearing about it. But it's like this user's Surface Book, and it's like, I love the Surface Book. The Surface Book is fine. It's a gorgeous product. I mean, the hinge is kind of weird, and most of our users don't even really use it in tablet mode, but just the fact that it has, like, two batteries you can get it with, like, the discrete GPU that's in the keyboard section and stuff like that. I mean, it's a pretty cool product. Kind of heavy, real top heavy too. You can't open it with one hand. I nearly threw one across the table by doing that. But it's like, this dock is terrible. It's like everything else works on the dock, but the external display. I've used three different docks. I've made sure that everything is up to date, even using the dock firmware update tool on all three docks. I've changed the different types of input methods. I've changed the different types of input cables. I mean, I don't have another Surface Book to try it with, and I can't go take somebody else's that's in the middle of doing something. And so it's like, I don't know what else to do. I was like, to me, it's not the dock at this point.
and to me, to be quite frank about it, it almost feels like it's the non-intended use case scenario, the way they treat it.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like they don't want you to use it that way, which, whatever. I mean, it's fine. I mean, and because of that dock, it's sort of like soured my taste of wanting
Surface.
It's
tainted the whole Surface line for you.
It is. It's like, as I tell my supervisor, it's like, are we going to have to keep buying these Surface products? She's like, probably. I was like, oh, why? And it's mainly because of the dock. It's not the book itself. Now, I did have a book that was bad when it came. The dock connector on the side of it, it's like, it would work one way and you'd turn it over and it wouldn't work one way, but you turn it over and it would work. It was really weird. And so they had to swap out the whole thing. And what's really weird, it's like, okay, the keyboard and the actual computer part are two different things. The dock connector's on the keyboard part. Why can't you just send me another keyboard? No, they want the
Amen
whole thing.
That.
Why can't they want the whole thing swapped out? And so
can
it was
you
just,
buy that part separately?
I don't know. I don't think so. And it's like, and the thing is, it's like, well, the serial numbers are tied together. It's two serial numbers. You get a serial number for the tablet part, and you get a serial number for the keyboard part. And so it's just really weird.
Well, that would be kind of cool if you could, like, buy the Surface top and then buy whichever base you wanted. Like, if you wanted one with a discrete GPU, just buy the one with that and to upgrade one you didn't do later or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a novel idea for a potential product line, Microsoft. Hey, listen to us and redo the dock.
I think they redid the hinge on this last version, though.
I think they did. I mean, it's kind of like a watch band. It's kind of weird.
It's cool. It was
different.
Meant to take a lot of use. But it's weird.
And it, I think it helps, too, with, like, if you're using it in clamshell mode, it's, like, helps maybe dispense some of the heat with the screen not actually sitting flat.
Gives you a nice handle to hold, too.
Yeah, no kidding. It might hurt a little bit if you hit somebody with it. But
and that's an added benefit.
Yeah. But but we mentioned iPads, and so I want to talk a little bit about iOS 11.3 that came out. Apple just had their education event, and so they came out with these new iPads and all these new frameworks and stuff for like ClassKit and Schoolwork App and stuff. One of the big mobile device management companies, Jamf, there was apparently a bug with iOS 11.3. It looks like if you use the Apple-designed MDM hooks to send the commands to the iPad to update to 11.3, if I'm understanding this right, Jamf Pro will send the commands, the iPad will update, and in order to reestablish like connection back to the management server, Jamf is expecting the device to send something back. I guess some like kind of code or something like that. Well, apparently from the beta, and Jamf is real good about like being ready on like day zero. It's like Jamf 10.3 came out for 11.3 like 4 or 5 days before 11.3 came out, because Apple's been doing this public beta, and they got the developer betas, and so it's like they're taking the opportunity to get ready for it. And so something happened between the last beta and I guess the official release for 11.3, and the iPad device, after Jamf updated, it didn't send the right kind of code that Jamf was expecting to get back that they were used to from the beta process. And so it actually broke communication with the with the management studio. And so at that point,
Apple is learning a very hard lesson right now. You don't change public documented APIs without telling someone.
And that's what Jamf put in like their blog post and the email that I actually got. And luckily, I kind of hold off on doing iOS updates for a week or two. My devices I'll update, but mine aren't managed because they belong to me. But like all my managed devices, I'll hold off for a while, because probably in a week 11.3.1 is going to come out. And so it's just in the 11 upgrade cycle has made me just want to pull my hair out completely, because it's like, it seemed like for a while it's like every 2 weeks there was an update, and just, I just couldn't keep up. So in fact, I just kind of gave up in a way, and just sort of like, well, maybe they'll update on their own. That's kind of what I was thinking. And so, and actually most of them did kind of update on their own, and so I can't really complain about that. But what I want to kind of compare this to is a while back, we actually talked about it on our episode, Google broke the internet in my Chromebooks.
That was a fun one, wasn't it?
But let's discuss this here for a second. Okay, so Google screwed up, which, I mean, in a way, I kind of screwed up because of the way I was doing my Wi-Fi. I mean, because it only messed up, like, WPA2 shared keys. Now, see, Google fixed that problem within, like, 4 hours, and I was lucky enough that, I mean, I still had to touch my devices and to get them connected back on, or I just remembered my fix that I could just fire up my enrollment SSID to get them connected. But I mean, some larger schools may have to like thousands of devices that they had to deal with, and so I can just imagine like what this is causing. And it's like Apple just holds this education event, and then they do this, and it breaks something that education needs, and who knows when this is going to get fixed. I mean,
have they even really talked about them working on something, or has it all been Jamf?
The only thing I can see is Jamf is going to come up with a release and do something in their code where they just put in whatever Apple's giving back now from the device to like accept it or something like that. And so it's like they're not going to rely on Apple to actually go back to what they had documented that MDM should expect.
See, and that's not a good practice to start getting into.
I mean, is this just that's Apple's education, right? I mean, so we give you $100 pencil. And call it good. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't get Apple's thoughts that it's, yeah, I just don't get Apple's thoughts on education. It's, or lack thereof for that matter. Because I mean, this is bad. I mean, I can't imagine. It's like the guy that I saw about it on Twitter. The same guy from like 9to5 Mac that I mentioned last week, that, he had testing that he had to do. And he needed to put his iPads, it's called guided access, but it's essentially kiosk mode, where it could only run the one app or single app use or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't do it.
I mean, so what is his solution for that? Because that was going to be my next question. Well, what happens if it happened this week and you used iPads for star testing?
I would literally have to go manually set up single app use and do it.
Can you even do that?
You can do it manually, yes.
Like through configurator or something?
Well, I mean, you can go do it on the device itself, but it's under like the restrictions and stuff.
Oh,
like
okay, okay.
So you'd have to like have to create like a restrictions password.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah, but I mean, the thing is, too, it's like, unless your MDM has pushed out a configuration profile that like removes access to those things, and then you somehow have to get the configuration profile off, and the only way to do that is to completely blow away the device, and so yeah, it's a headache. And so, but you know, that's another reason why I kind of hold off on updating things right away. It's, but I mean, I kind of get his point. It's like, hey, this has been in beta for many, many months now. It should be good to go, and then.
Especially when they are near final release, you don't change functionality. You polish what's there.
And then, like you mentioned earlier, you don't change something that's documented that you give to other. If you're not going to provide your own mobile device management solution, if you're going to make everybody, if you're going to make your users rely on somebody else to manage the mobile devices, then you can't change the APIs and the code that you have documented for these mobile device makers to use. You can't do it, because then it breaks everything, obviously. And
yeah,
so,
it's just not cool.
I mean, so luckily I didn't get this bug, and I was thinking about starting it, because usually what I do is just like, I'll start the, if I do deploy the OS updates, I'll click the thing and then I'll tell it, it's like, hey, prompt the user to go ahead and reboot. And most of the time they'll get like this thing that pops up on the screen and they'll just hit okay, go. And that's sort of how I do it. And so it's like, I don't want to just do it and like interrupt them. But I give them the option to be able to do it, or it just sort of does it on its own overnight. And so that's usually how I do it. But I'm glad I didn't push out 11.3. I mean, because of this, because I can't imagine. I mean, I don't use my iPads for testing.
So I do have a question. Has it affected any other MDM besides Jamf?
That's the thing that I don't really know. I mean, but you would think it would, because if Jamf is using documented something API response or reply from Apple, then everybody else is going to be using that same thing.
And that's what I thought too, but I haven't read any news about any other product but Jamf. But I know they're by far like 90% something.
They should be, because I mean, I will say it every time that we talk about Jamf that Apple needs to buy Jamf, and they just need to make it. They need to give it away for education, just like Google G Suite does. And they need to let that be the official management solution for iPads and whatever else, Macs. I mean, that's what they need to do. I mean, because it's a phenomenal product. I mean, it makes managing iPads so much easier. Now, granted, I mean, a lot of that has to do with Apple providing the API stuff to be able to do that. So, it's a give and take kind of thing. But and kudos to Apple for working with like MDM companies to be able to provide them things to do this if they're not going to do an MDM themselves. But to me, that just seems like more work, because now they have to make sure everything is compatible with every possible MDM out there.
Well, they don't. They just publish the APIs, and it's up to the MDMs to accept them.
Yeah, and so I would assume everything else broke too. I mean,
yeah, I'm kind of curious if someone out there running Meraki, let's say.
Why would anybody do that?
I know. That was the only one I can think of. I know IBM makes one, but I can't even remember the name of it.
But if you're a small school and you only have like 15 devices, I would recommend using Meraki, because you can get it for free for up to like 100 devices.
Yeah.
And it's essentially going to do the same thing. I mean, all it can do...
Yeah, somewhat.
But all it can do is what Apple allows it to do. And Apple allows them all to do the same thing, in theory. And so, I mean, by that thinking, Meraki should be able to do everything that Jamf can do.
So I wonder, hey, anybody out there that's listening, if you run something besides Jamf and iPads, hey, contact us. Let us know if you're experiencing the same problem, because I'm really curious about it. I haven't seen anything about it in the news.
Yeah, me either. But then again, it's like, this
I mean,
might
Jamf
be...
Jamf owns it.
Yeah, and... Yeah, I know. At least, but Jamf did not hesitate to pass that buck, though. It's like, hey, we did not get a... We were expecting a documented response from the device, and we did not get it.
Well, and kudos to them for actually calling out the problem.
Exactly. But luckily, I didn't get this bug. I got the Google Network bug, but I didn't get this bug, luckily.
Yeah, I did dodge the network bug.
But the cool thing is that once Jamf actually comes out with their release, and I think it's coming probably early next week, from what I understand, if your device lost connectivity to your MDM, it'll just come back.
That's cool.
You won't have to do anything. They're going to do something where whatever response the iPad is sending to the MDM server, the MDM server will accept it. So and then the fix is coming.
And I think they need to do that permanently, where they are expecting a certain response, and if they get something different, they need to throw the, not completely lose communication, but throw it into a different status where you can say, hey, something weird's going on.
Yeah, and
kind of a warning mode.
But, I mean, if this is the documented response that the iPad is supposed to send back...
I know, they that's shouldn't what it have goes to deal to. With this, I know. But they are, so now they might as well try to protect themselves in the future when it's going to happen again.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what can you do to, like, prevent this? I mean, just accept anything? Like, if this iPad has been managed before, when it runs an upgrade to a new OS, just accept whatever response that it sends and let it reconnect.
Yeah, from the same thing, and they might have to do that, but, I mean, that does open it up to some kind of attack, but...
I mean, maybe you could lock it down with, like, if this serial number, does communicate, it has to do the serial number because it knows, like, the device serial number. It knows a lot about the device, actually. So, like,
it'd be a very narrow attack surface, but it'd be one.
You'd have to spoof, like, a serial number or a MAC address or something like that. So, I mean, there's fun probably times. Ways they could do it. And Jamf will take care of it. I mean, if anybody's going to find a solution for it, it'll be Jamf. But it's like, this is Apple's fault, and... Apple's, like, real quiet about it. Google would have had to update. Their 11.3.1 would have been out later that day if this would have been Google. Let's just put it that way.
And you know what? I don't understand why it's not. Apple's the richest company in the world. Come on now.
I know.
You got the personnel to do it. You know what it's doing. Make it not do it.
And, like, when your number one MDM provider contacts you, it's like, hey, this is what's happening. Somebody should jump on that.
Yeah.
But maybe I want to know is like...
Maybe they didn't update their Apple Care.
Yeah, probably. That's probably it. Or they didn't renew their developer license or something. But I want to know the guy who changed the thing since the last beta to make it give a different response. His head should roll.
It's going to be easy to figure out who. Just look for the next job opening.
Yeah. No. Well, that would be the AI guy, right? The search
They have some Linux kernel developer positions open.
It's like, yeah, because nobody wants to develop on macOS kernel, Darwin or whatever it is.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, it's close enough. We'll just ask for these guys.
So before we get to our last sort of topic today, I kind of want to talk about, we started talking about processors. I want to talk a little bit more about processors, just kind of real quick. It looks like the rumor is Apple's about to do another transition. And this will be, I guess you could say it would probably be their fourth transition.
Because they did 68,000 to PowerPC to Intel.
And then they did, like, 32-bit to 64. I mean, we can kind of consider that a transition. And so, I mean that's a major thing to not, like, have to reinstall the OS and switch to 64-bit. I mean, that's kind of crazy. They can change file systems on the fly. I mean, they can change processor architects on the fly. They got some pretty cool engineers going on over there. And so the rumor is that they're developing their own chips, their own ARM chips, and for the Mac to run on. And so the thing going around, like, the tech podcast and stuff like that today, and I don't really want to get, like, too much into it, but since you're kind of a processor guy, I just kind of want to see, like, what do you think, like, the implications of this being. The rumor is what people are wanting to do. They want macOS to go away, they want iOS to go away, and they want Apple OS. And they want, like, the operating system to basically adapt to whatever platform that it's running on. You know, essentially what Windows 10 was supposed to do.
And it actually does do that. It's just no one makes any other kind of hardware for it.
So, I mean, I just kind of want to know, like, what kind of implications is this going to do? I mean, is this beneficial, like, for the industry in general? I mean, like we said, 85% of computer users can probably do whatever they want on a Chromebook because all they need is a web browser.
Well, and I think a lot of the misconception is that ARM is it's not a very capable processor. And, the ARM chip that's in your smartphone is not very capable, but a company, Cavium, makes server infrastructure stuff using ARM with, like, 72 cores and those kind of things, 16 PCI Express lanes and whatnot. So there are ARM-capable machines out there. I mean, they're sold. I mean, heck, HP sells one that you can go buy now.
So theoretically, I would be able to edit this podcast in Logic Pro on an ARM chip.
Yeah.
It would be possible.
And now, there would need to be a recompile of the software, of course.
Because, well, yeah, obviously.
But, I mean, there are. And then, actually, the parent company to ARM, the ARM Acorn Research, and they actually, in the late 90s, actually released a desktop PC that ran on ARM. I mean, it's not anything. It's new to everybody now because they're not. We haven't really had the processor wars that we did when we were younger. You know, they had the PowerPC Intel wars. And then even in the early 2000s, there was other company architectures coming up, like the Transmeta and the VLIW chips, which were insanely cool. But they just hadn't had that in a long time. So everybody's like, oh, apocalypse, ARM. But no, there are some really, really capable ARM processors now. And there's a company called 96 Boards. And they manufacture development kits for all sorts of different kind of ARM processors. And you can get some from them that even have empty PCI Express slots, so you could throw in a Radeon GPU in an ARM board. And guess what? It works, because AMD's open source driver works on ARM. So, yeah. I mean, it can be a fully capable machine. I think people are just scared that they're going to throw a Snapdragon in there or something like that.
Yeah, because
the equivalent.
Because when people talk about ARM, they think about their phone. But I mean, but even then, it's like the processor, the 18X in the iPad Pro. I mean, and granted, you kind of go just based on like Geekbench or whatever app they're using to kind of compare like the processing number or whatever they get to the benchmarks, they call it benchmarks. Geekbench or whatever that app is called. And so they run this and they think, well, this one's like rating higher than this processor,
you know,
that's in like a 2011 MacBook Pro.
And I have a problem with Geekbench. You know, those numbers aren't testing the same thing.
No, of course not.
I mean, when you, like, I was doing some, like, when you're testing different platforms on the same product, the same benchmark, like if you're testing the GPU on an iPhone, it's using the Metal API, but you're testing a GPU on the desktop, it's using OpenCL. These are not the same animals. Why? We can't use the same numbers to judge them.
No, I don't. And plus, it's like you have to consider that version of Geekbench was like compiled to run on iOS. And so it's been like optimized to run best on iOS. And so it's almost like you'd have to find some kind of tool that runs the exact same on every device, no matter what's in it or what's running on it. And so, as I take all those Geekbench numbers with a grain of salt, really. It's like, hey, I really only look at the ones that's like, if you run, like if you're on the same platform, like the iPhone to iPhone or iPad to iPad, I want to see how like the new iPad compares to the old iPad.
Those are relevant. But the numbers that they're putting out there to compare like Intel and ARM, no, those aren't relevant. They're testing completely different things. It's not really a fair benchmark. Now, I get to throw AMD in here now because, yes, I found a way to shove AMD in this conversation.
Always. I mean, that's sort of why I kind of brought it up, because I know you had some AMD stuff to
talk
about.
Well, I mean,
you always do.
I always do. Now, AMD, they have an ARM license, and they're another company. They are making ARM processors. They have their Opteron A series, which is an ARM chip, and it's a high-performance ARM chip. It's an 8-core ARM, which is not huge compared to what they have now, but it has the capability to have 128 gig of RAM, 8 PCI Express lanes, 10 gigabit, and all this other stuff. And so, no, an ARM processor is not necessarily going to mean, oh, it's the end of Mac. No, it's just a different era. I mean, it can still have the same kind of performance.
I kind of see a world where, like, you buy an iMac or a Mac Pro or something, and you're going to use it, and I kind of see maybe they got it where it has like two processors in it. Maybe it has like a traditional Xeon or whatever they use in the Mac Pro, and then it has like this pretty beefy ARM processor that they develop. And so it's like for your everyday web browsing, checking emails, things like that, it'll use the ARM chip. But like, and I know there's probably some things you have to do with like emulation and all this other stuff, and it's probably not even possible.
No, not if you're sharing RAM and those kind of things, because I mean, we're talking about direct wires into the processors for those
things.
And
so it's just like, I just see a world, it's like kind of like using a discrete graphics card. It's like when it needs it, it's there. But when it's not needed, it's not there. Because but like we mentioned, it's like 80 most of the I mean, but Windows 10 is going to bring on ARM, they're going to do 64-bit apps.
Yep.
And so if Windows can do it, I mean surely Apple can do it. I mean,
yeah, and they're literally doing it on the processor I was making fun of, the Snapdragon 845. So I mean,
and so it'll be I don't think the transition's going to be bad. I'm not worried about it.
I think it's going to go a lot like the PowerPC to Intel transition, where they're going to have a compatibility layer. Like they may even bring back the name back, Rosetta.
Yeah.
And yes, those applications that are running through Rosetta run much noticeably slower, but it doesn't break them until the developer can update.
But you know, that's why they also have like this Project Marzipan, I think is what it's called, mm-hmm. where the rumor is that, and it's actually rumored to come out like this year, that the developers are actually going to be able to compile their iOS apps to be able to run on macOS like natively.
And they should be able to do that. And
so between
no
that
excuse.
And the rumors of them doing their own ARM chip, I mean, it's almost like they're providing like, okay, it's almost like that time they said, look, you need to start using these sizing controls in your Xcode or your application development, because you just need
to trust us.
You need to start using this. And all of a sudden we got bigger iPhones and we got bigger iPads and we got smaller iPads. And so now if you use like their resizing APIs or whatever, it's like everything just works. And so
yeah. It's
as almost, to me, it's like if Marzipan actually comes true and if they're actually working on a processor, it's almost like Apple laying the groundwork that's like, hey, look. And they're saying like 2020 this is coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long way away.
Well, it's 2 years. It's not that far.
In technology, it is.
Well, that's true. Everything changes in like 4 seconds.
Well, so. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. Now, the thing that it is going to kill, Fusion's gone. I mean, it's just gone.
Yeah.
So you will not have any virtualization stuff because Fusion is reliant on Intel V technology.
But I mean, you could kind of get away with that, but because if Windows 10 is going on ARM, maybe you could boot camp and do the Windows 10 on ARM.
Virtualization doesn't work on that.
Well, that's true.
So I mean, because they're all using the virtualization extensions that are available in the x86 architecture.
Well, even boot camp.
ARM boot camp's booting natively, but it's all signed code.
I got you.
Even on the ARM. Like the ARM Windows machines, the bootloaders are locked and the firmwares are signed and whatnot. You can't even load like Linux on it or whatnot.
They're
really locked down Secure Boot.
So I mean that could potentially be an issue, I guess.
Yeah, and it definitely kills the Hackintosh community. That's gone too, but I'm sure Apple was okay with that.
Yeah, I mean just like those resellers, Fivestar, Sistar, or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was funny.
But it's like, but I'm not worried about it because it's actually going to give the majority of computer users what they want. They want lighter, faster, less power, and they want a battery that lasts for 4 days.
You can take that list, throw out one, and you can have it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't have all of those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're going to get lighter, longer lasting, less power machines. They're not going to be faster, but you can pick one of those things to throw out and...
But I mean, I think that maybe Apple is setting people up for these expectations by releasing this MacBook. I mean, with the slower like M series processor in it, it's like if you want lighter, less power, all day battery life, you're going to have to sacrifice some processing power. And so it's almost like you have to. But I mean, they just came out with a statement like yesterday that saying the Mac Pro was coming in 2019. It's not coming this year. Yeah, so it's almost like, hey, and they just came out with the iMac Pro. And so in some ways, it's like I think moving to ARM is good. But I don't know if it's like if the entire line is going to move.
No,
to ARM.
I can see the lower end. I think you even said this. The lower end's going to be ARM. The upper end's still going to be the big beefy things for the video editors and whatnot.
And so, but it makes me wonder is like, is Apple even interested in like doing two lines of the Mac? I mean, they barely have any interest in doing one line of the Mac. I mean, just look at how many days it's been since the Mac Pro has been updated, or even the Mac Mini.
Let's be honest. We know exactly what's going to be in the Mac Pro. It's behind the screen in the iMac Pro. It's just going to be in a different form.
Well, the rumor has it they're going to actually do something that pro people want. They want a modular box. And so that's the rumor.
And that's what they did. You believe it or not, the trash can Mac was modular.
Well, I mean, it was modular that nobody could do anything with.
But it was modular.
But people want a big box. They want the cheese grater back. That's what they want.
And I don't blame them, but I don't think Apple's going to do that.
I saw on Twitter today that's like Apple's spending more time designing a computer for the people that don't care what it looks like.
Exactly. Hence, the Hackintosh community exists.
I mean, they want
it's for those
a beefier,
power users
powerful
that want
machine.
A bigger machine.
But yeah, it's just I just wanted to kind of touch on this process thing.
Well, I have one more thing I want to throw in there about this thing.
Okay.
And it's a very good thing for the entire industry as a whole. Yes, ARM processors are lower in power.
And cost.
And a cost, because there's much less components in them. They're a RISC processor versus a CISC processor. But ARM processors tend to have many cores. Slow speeds, many cores. So perhaps this is going to force developers of applications to finally embrace multi-threading as they should have a long time ago, so you're not relying on one processor core to go run it 110%.
I know. It would be so great if some of the tools that I use, like Audacity and some other things, that actually used all two of my cores.
If you know of a multi-threaded MP3 encoder that actually works, not one that says it does, please let us know.
Well, the one that I use by Marco Arment Forecast, it's actually designed to use all cores available.
It?
Yes, it actually does. I mean, because my little iStat menus thing at the top, I have my two little bars, my little graphs for my two cores.
Yeah, because
and they'll both fill up when that application is running.
Yeah, I mean, this problem is not unique to Mac. I mean, on my Windows machine, I have a Ryzen 1700 with 8 cores and 16 threads, and the vast majority of the time, 4 are doing something, and the other 4 are just kind of like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah, it's like, it's just wasted. I mean, just think about how much crypto you can mine if you could have all of your processors going.
Actually, now that tears it apart. That so and Adobe. Adobe has done a fantastic job on their media encoders about using multi-threaded applications, so I think they may be actually ahead when it comes to ARM. Whether they do the transition, I don't know, just because I know how optimized they are for x86.
And I know that Apple actually released upgrades to Final Cut and Logic to take advantage of multi-cores for the new iMac Pro that came out. So, I mean, the main audio editor that I use can do it. And so before we switch to our last story that we'll spend a few minutes on, I will say, how much crypto will you be able to mine on an ARM trip?
None. Let's just go ahead and say none.
None. Okay.
They don't have the L2 cache.
So here's my tinfoil hat. Maybe that is the underlying reason why Apple's doing this. It's like, we're going to put the crypto mining out of business.
But honestly, no one mining crypto is using a Mac.
Yeah, no, considering Apple really only has, 2.5% market share of the PC PC market, really? I mean, they don't have hardly anything.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. And if we go over to the cell phones, they got less than 1% worldwide.
Yeah, well, you got to go by worldwide. If you go by, like, U.S.,
worldwide.
It might be more 50-50 U.S., but worldwide, it's like everybody loves their cheap Android phones. Okay, last story, and it actually has to do with Google. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about this because, I mean, you kind of do it in a way because you do some Verizon stuff with your school, and so I just kind of want to hear your thoughts about it. Google is apparently equipping school buses with Wi-Fi and Chromebooks for what they're calling a rolling study hall in the school bus for rural areas, like my area and your area, the places that do not have, like, access to high-speed internet at their house.
Let's go ahead and say it. Let's go ahead and be brutal over here, Verizon. The areas that don't have Verizon coverage.
Or the ones where they're going to use Verizon MiFis and hotspots to power these school buses.
That's what they're doing. That's what this program is. It's a big metal can that you're putting an access point in and expecting it to work.
And so I don't see it. And here's the thing. And it's like, I kind of take, and we kind of have like differences, opinions of this. You're thinking this is more for like the schools that are doing like one-to-one so the kids can use their assigned Chromebooks on the bus on their way home. I read this as like Google's actually going to put Chromebooks on the school bus.
Like, and do you expect that bus driver that's making $7.75 an hour to inventory and manage who's taking what Chromebook where?
Yeah, and when was the last – have you ever used a laptop in a moving car?
I can't use anything in a moving car. I'll throw up all over the place.
And it's like – I mean, as smooth as ride as a car can be or a truck can be, a bus is not a car or a truck.
No, it's a can.
It's
a big can with wheels.
Bouncing around, and it's like, it's the last time I rode a bus, it's like, oh, this is miserable. The seats are uncomfortable. It bounces around. It's hot.
This is one of those ideas that looks great on paper. Google, come ride my yellow dog and see how well it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't even have air conditioning.
We are starting to get buses with AC in them. I will say that. I mean, last time I went on a UIL trip, we rode in the bus with an air conditioner. It got pretty cold in there until it started leaking. And still, it started leaking inside of the bus.
No, condensation. It's like pouring all over the floor.
Yeah, it's so.
But that's okay. You just open the back door with a water hose and spray out all the trash anyway. It's a good thing about school buses.
Are these access points going to be waterproof?
I know. It's like, and there's been products like, I mean, there's products out there now. What's that bridge that's out there that does this? Cradle Point? Cradle Point.
Yeah,
that actually designs products to actually pop in a hotspot or a jetpack or something.
Well, I honestly feel that, and this is just because I get the government flyers because we're on the program, this is a MiFi that comes with a magnetic antenna.
That just sort of boop, right on top
of
the top.
And has a power cord that you can run into the cigarette lighter adapter. Sorry, not cigarette lighter.
12-volt.
That's inappropriate. It's a 12-volt plug.
12-volt plug. Yeah, don't be inappropriate. I don't want to have to click the explicit mark.
But let's be honest. If you take one of those lighters and shove it in that 12-volt thing and push it, guess what it's going to do?
It's going to light a cigarette.
It's going to light.
Yeah. But no smoking on school buses or school grounds or smoking at all. It's bad for you.
No, smoking's bad, okay?
And so it's, yeah, I just, on paper, like you said, it's great.
Man, it looks cool.
But this is kind of where, I wanted to bring this up because I wanted to turn this back on Apple. Because Apple just had this education event, and it's like, hey, we have education, you can't afford it, but here's what we're offering. And then 2 days later, Google announces this program. I mean, it may not be the brightest idea in the world to put Chromebooks on a school bus, but I'm not going to turn it down if they come bring it to me. I mean, that's free Chromebooks and free Wi-Fis. It's like, here's a company that says that they're all in on education, and here's a company that actually does something for education.
And to be quite honest, sorry, Verizon, I love your program. I really hope they're not working with Verizon on this. I hope they're using someone like T-Mobile, because they have a more appropriate network for this. Verizon's network, oh my, it is so oversubscribed. I can't imagine putting 100 kids on a single MiFi and expecting it to work.
I think what would be best is if Google came, if Google was going to come do it at Orangefield or come do it at where you're at, they need to come with like multiple devices for all the networks, and they need to pick the one that does best, and that's what they use.
And I bet they are. Because, you know, they do have Project Fi. It's probably actually what it's running on.
Yeah, and Project Fi runs off, piggybacks off everybody, doesn't it?
I think it's only Sprint and T-Mobile right now.
But Sprint's only
one of those two, it's going to work.
A 1% difference in network quality. That's what they say.
BS.
That's what the little guy says on the commercial. But, yeah, I just wanted to end with this kind of, I think it's great that Google is, like, putting their money where their mouth is when it comes to education.
Oh, what kind of data would they be able to collect with that?
I know, right? At least it's not Facebook doing it.
Oh, poor Facebook.
Yeah, it's not looking good for Facebook right now.
You know, there was that game long ago, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Well, Facebook now,
knows. Well, this is true. Now it's Where's Miss Sandberg?
Yeah. And then they came out with the news today that's like they're deleting messages that Zuckerberg sends out and other executives. It's like after so long, they're just disappeared. It's like from other people's inboxes. It's like if Mark Zuckerberg was to sent me a message like 6 months ago, there's a good chance that it was deleted. It's like, that's not right. I mean, you don't do that for everybody else, but you're going to do it for them. I mean, I don't know. It's just, and then Twitter came out with was reminded of some news today about Twitter killing like third party apps, some API that they used, and they haven't replaced it yet with what they say they're going to replace it. And so everything's
PWA
just,
all the way.
Everything is just, social media is just going down the can today. I mean, it's just sort of bad. But
hey, it brings back memories of MySpace and animated GIFs.
Yeah. GIFs are back, though. You may not know it, but GIFs are back.
I know, but they shouldn't be.
Hey, I'm working on my GIF game.
Well, you know, do you know that pings have an animation feature?
Pings?
Yeah. PNG files.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's an animation spec for it that allows more than 256 colors.
Uh-oh. That's some high-quality GIFs.
I know. And GIFs are owned by CompuServe. I think we forget that.
Is CompuServe even around anymore?
No, but they created the GIF and owned it.
Prodigy?
Stop using GIFs, people.
Is it GIF or JIF?
I call it a GIF.
It's a GIF. It's a G. It's a hard G. GIF.
I think this was a TV show somewhere.
It's probably.
No, I saw this on one of the YouTube channels I watch, Bitwig.
Yeah, it's an ongoing joke between tech people. It's like, is it GIF or JIF? It's not peanut butter.
It was between Bitwick and Wifey Sauce. Yes, those are very in.
but that'll be our show for this week. We'll just end on a
Wifey Sauce.
Yeah, we're just gonna stop there. We'll see you next week. No. If you want to check out our show notes, visit educatingtech.net/31, episode 31. And actually, we are actually coming up on 1 year. In fact, as we record this, our first episode was released on May 6th, and so that is like 1 month from today. And so I got something crazy kind of planned for whatever episode we do around that time. We didn't do something that some podcasts do on their first episode, so I think we're going to kind of go back and do it. Chris doesn't know about it yet, and I'm not going to tell him because he'll probably balk and not have anything cool to say. So I'm just going to little tease out there. But if you want to follow Chris on Twitter, he doesn't check it too often, but sometimes he does. He's at Feeks.
If you send me a message, I'll get a notification and I'll actually log.
Yeah, in 3 days, but it's okay. Does your PWA actually send you notifications?
Oh yeah, I get every bit of integration as a normal app.
Because 11.3 now allows for PWAs, and so I was able to do the Twitter Lite thing like you did, and it's the website. I mean, let's just put it that way. But
mine actually has full integration in the camera and everything.
Well, mine sort of does, from what I could tell, but I don't know about it. I don't know about notifications. So we might have to try that later.
Yeah, it does work. And hold up, I got to say this. Lumia phones came back in stock again.
Again?
Yes, and PWA apps work on them, so maybe they're coming back from the dead.
Maybe. Doubt it. Microsoft just needs to, like, run Android, and just they need to make a Lumia phone that's running Android with the Microsoft launcher and call it good. But if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Twist of Matt. Also, check out Chris's YouTube channel. He's up to, like, 3,000 minutes, I think, is what you said.
Yeah, woohoo!
So, I mean, and he did, what was the last video you did? Keyboard? The clacky-clacky keyboard?
No, I did a benchmark video with the Vega Frontier and 8K resolutions.
Oh, that's right. The one that went kind of bad, the miserable performance at 8K in that
game. Oh, it's hilarious.
So, and I know he's got some other stuff coming down the pipe. So, be sure to check that out and subscribe.
I get a little teaser in here. I'm building a four-way cluster and OSB this weekend to do some testing on.
Hey, that'll be fun.
Plywood. So case. You may get to see me cut off my finger with a table saw.
Or fall through your stool. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that happened.
But yeah, send us if you have any, if your MDM broke and you're not running Jam, send us some feedback at educatingtech on Twitter or an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you as far as that goes. Don't forget, if we start getting a lot of questions and stuff in, maybe we'll do a Q&A show. But not the live hangout show that Chris wants to do.
I'm working on him. He won't tell me what he's doing, but I'll tell you what I'm working on.
So, yeah. But that's our show, and we'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.